Peace of Christ be with you. Hey, before you sit down, greet one another with the peace of Christ. Let's come back together. Let's come back together. One of the great, great joys of life, if you've not yet had them, is what? What have we been talking about? This friendship. That's right. One of the great joys of life is friendship. The Apostle Paul writes a letter from prison to his friends. And as we explore and kind of walk through the contours of the book of Philippians, we've been discovering what it means to be friends. One of my delights tonight is I get to introduce one of my friends. She is a scholar, she's a professor, she's been a pastor, she is a tremendous preacher, but above all that, Dr. Mary Holst, the chaplain at Calvin College, is my gospel friend. Would you please welcome Mary Holst to the pulpit of hope? Yes. Now, many of you probably know this, but maybe some of you don't know this. If you don't, it's probably a gross lack of communication on my part. But as we've been walking through Philippians this semester, we've been doing this in tandem with Calvin College. So as we've been preaching through the book of Philippians at the gathering, their equivalent service, the loft, which Mary is the preacher at, has been going back and forth. And so we thought it would be a dandy idea if we did a pulpit exchange. So we've invited Mary, our colleague and partner in the gospel at Calvin, to be with us today. So would you one more time give Mary a warm welcome?
Well, it is a delight for me to be with you here at Hope. I have 1 year in as the chaplain at Calvin, 1 year and a few months, and Trigg has been a dear friend of mine for a long time, and it's been a delight to have such a great partner to go back and forth with and say, do you run into this, and help me with this, and help me with this too, please? And it's so much fun to be here, and it's really funny to be in a gathering of people where I look around and I think I should know you. And yet there's only a few little faces here that I know. It's just, it's a really odd experience to think you look like all of my students. So you blend really well. It's you know, like 50 years when Hope and Calvin merge together, you know, it'll be great. We'll have like the strongest gene pool ever. You know, it'll be just very strong, very good looking, very tall, and very blonde, but good looking, yes. But as Trigg said, we're looking at Philippians. And if you want to haul a Bible out, the Pew Bible is page 955. We're looking at Philippians 4 and these two very dense verses, verses 8 and 9 of Philippians 4 is what we're looking at. Philippians 4, 8 and 9. This is what Paul writes to his dear friends in Philippi. He says to them, finally, beloved, whatever is true, whatever is honorable, whatever is just, whatever is pure, whatever is pleasing, whatever is commendable, if there is any excellence and if there is anything worthy of praise, think about these things. Keep on doing the things that you have learned and received and heard and seen in me, and the God of peace will be with you. This is the word of the Lord. Yesterday, I was at a soccer game where there was a disputed call. And in a moment, it went from, hey, isn't this a great day to be out watching a soccer game and not doing other things, to, who told you you could judge a referee in a soccer game? Who told you you could coach? Who told you you could play? And in a moment, it went from like, this is beautiful, yay, go team, to like, I'm gonna kill you! ugliness descended in a second. Some of you are going to go home for Thanksgiving. You're all going to be gathered around a table. The food's going to smell really good. You're going to think, finally, we're getting some good food. I'm so excited about this. You're going to be gathered around. It's going to be all like that warm glow with like the soft focus of a Barbara Walters special, you know. You're going to be all excited about it, and you're going to start like cutting into the bird and passing around the cranberries, and somebody's going to say, you voted for him? And ugliness is going to descend in a second. Some of you are going to walk home from the gathering after a long day of doing all the things that you had to get done, and maybe a little Sabbath in there somewhere, and you're going to go home, and you're going to be tired, and you're going to throw the backpack on the floor, and you're going to find that your roommates are all playing video games, and there are 3 days' worth of dirty dishes stacked on the counter, and things are going to get ugly in a second. Yes, can I have a witness? Yes, yes, yes. Ugliness comes in a heartbeat. And it doesn't only come in external relationships. You're walking back to your dorm after class. You had an early morning. And you see coming down toward you on the path another young woman. And this young woman has dressed for the day. She's got on the skinny jeans and the slouchy boots, and her hair's all silky and her lip gloss is all shiny. And, you know, you had an early class, so you've got, like, the sweats and the ponytail. And she walks by you, and you think, on my best day, I would never look that good. And you walk to your dorm with your eyes on the ground the whole way. You're sitting in the back of the room, and you're watching your professor write out the formulas, and you're pretty sure you've got it. Until that night, when it's late, and you're the only one left still awake, and you're trying to solve the proof, and you just can't get it. And you're so tired that to your surprise, tears come to your eyes and you think, I am so stupid. You're the first one to the party and you're the last one to leave because it's the only place and the only time when you can drink without somebody judging you. And you know that in a heartbeat, you're going to lose your scholarship and you're going to lose your friends and you're going to lose any chance at self-respect, but you can't stop drinking. And you think, I'm never going to beat this. And the ugly thoughts move in a heartbeat. And they begin to fester and take root. And you begin to believe the things that you think. You begin to take them in and see them as truth. And they cause you to pull away from other people. They cause you to isolate and take refuge in things like video games and food and sex and sleep. And you become angrier and more depressed and more withdrawn. And things get uglier. Ugliness moves in a heartbeat. And this is why Paul wrote what he did. Because as you've learned, ugliness had moved into this community. Ugliness in the form of people from the outside telling them that they needed to do more, to be followers of Jesus. You have to keep kosher. You have to be circumcised. This is the only way to do it. Ugliness. Ugliness from the inside as these two church leaders couldn't agree with each other, and it was causing friction in the rest of the community. Ugliness was seeping in, spreading, taking root. Ugliness had moved into Philippi. And it seems that the best Paul can do, the strongest antidote he can provide, what he wants to pack into these two little verses is this. I think you should just think happy thoughts. You know, just like think happy thoughts. Like imagine a bluebird, a sunny day, sunset in the Grand Canyon, wakeboarding on Lake Michigan. Okay, good. Are we good? Have we thought the happy thoughts? I mean, you read this. Whatever is true, honorable, just, pure, plain. Think about these things. Okay. I mean, it feels like Paul's watched a few too many Oprah episodes. You know, like, visualize what you want and it will come to you and find your true center and live out of it. Imagine loveliness. You get a car, you get a car, you get a car. I mean, it has that kind of, like, let's just all think happy hearts, sit in a circle, sing kumbaya, gloss over everything, it'll be all fine. It has that sense to it. So obviously we must be missing something, right? Because thankfully, Paul was not like Oprah. And of course, there is more going on. Paul hows out the rhetoric of the day. He imitates the best philosophers of the age. And everybody knew that when a religious leader called you to think, he was actually calling you to engage with, to take account of, to assess, to evaluate. He didn't just want you to think, like, let's all just, you know, think. He actually wanted you to embrace, to hold, to feel, to smell what these virtues were about. It was whole body living out of these things that Paul was actually calling these people to do. A whole cell living out of what does it mean to be true and honest and pure and just? What does it look like? What does it smell like? I have a friend. He's 8. His name is Anton. And he is a huge fan of Hope College. Yes. Yes, he is. Huge. Huge fan of Hope College. His dad played soccer for Hope. His grandpa was a professor at Hope. When you ask Anton his favorite colors, he says, guess what? Orange and blue. Yes. If you asked him one of his favorite memories, he would say the Hope Calvin basketball game when he got to shake the hand of Dutch. It's like huge for him. He's got a picture with him on it. I mean, a little t-shirt, orange t-shirt. He has Hope banners in his room. He always keeps a running score for me of how the Hope, Calvin, whatever game is going on is happening. He always knows. I walked into the kitchen the other day where he and his family live, and he was sitting at his family's table staring at his father's iPad. And I walked in, I said, what are you doing, buddy? He said, Hope College is playing Alma College right now in soccer. And I'm watching the stats sheet to see when they score. Now, I don't know how many of you have watched a stats sheet while a game is happening live. Nothing happens. All right? The only numbers changing on that screen were the countdown of the clock. That's it. And he sat there transfixed until it was his bedtime. And the whole time he's sitting there and he's just willing the numbers to change, willing Hope to score. Anton thinks about Hope College the way Paul wants the Philippians to think about these virtues. He doesn't want them to just think about it. He wants them to get on the gear. He wants them to paint their faces. He wants them to have banners across the wall. He wants them to live out these virtues as if their life depended on it. That's living out these virtues. So when he says, look around you, and if you find something true, honest, pure, pleasing, just, commendable, excellent, praiseworthy, think about it. He's saying, when you find those things, swallow them up. And hang around with other people who swallow them up, who wear the same clothes that you do, who you can recognize across the street because they've got the same gear on that you do. When you see that, celebrate it. And he says this, and keep on doing whatever you've learned or heard or received or seen in me. Now, that may seem a little arrogant, like, okay, children, I've got this all together. Just do as I do. But here again, he's using the rhetorical device of the day, which when you had a religious leader who was doing something well, that leader would invite you into the story, invite you into the imitation, invite you into the journey. Anton did not come out of the womb a Hope fan. I argue his father disagrees. He was trained in it. He has sat on the bleachers next to his father and his grandfather. He was given orange and blue clothing to wear when he could barely walk. When Paul says, keep on doing the things that you've seen in me, he's inviting the Philippians to imitate him the way my friend Eric wants Anton to imitate him as a lover of Hope College. Just as you've seen me cheer on, just as you've seen me have so much fun, Paul's saying, just as you've seen all the joy that this has brought in my life, just as you have seen how this allows me to endure being in prison, just as you have seen how this allows me to forgive people who have wronged me, just as you have seen how this makes me feel content in situations where I have no reason to be content, when you see that in me, you do it too, because it's the best way to live. Why? Why? Why the call to virtuous life with people who are very aware of the ugliness of the world? Why does he call them to imitate him when they can't even see him, when they don't even think he's going to get out of prison, when they don't even know if they're ever going to see him again? Why the call? Because Paul knows that when you seek out things that are true, honorable, just, pure, you are seeking out the things of God. One of the great themes in the book of Philippians is that God is always working to take the ugly things and make them beautiful. To take the dead things and make them live. To take the things that are in despair and bring them hope. Remember that great chapter, chapter 2, where Paul describes so clearly the ugliness that Jesus willingly entered into. He humbled himself, he says. He became obedient to death, he writes, even death on a cross. Ugly. But then, he says, God highly exalted him, that at the name of Jesus, every knee shall bow and every tongue confess to the glory of God the Father. Paul knows that when people begin to seek out the things that are honorable and pure and pleasing and excellent and commendable, what they are seeking out is God. They are seeking out the work of God in the world, the work of a God who is always seeking to restore the things that are broken, to bring wholeness to people who are hurting. And he says, this is the way it works. When you do that, the God of peace will be with you. And by peace, he doesn't mean, you know, with kind of that warm, fuzzy feeling you have, like, ooh, I'm kind of peaceful, I'm kind of calm. He means the Jewish idea of shalom, the Jewish idea of restoration. When you are living in this way, he says, when these things are your passion, when these things are the banners on your walls, then the God of restoration, the God of shalom, is at work within and among you. And you get to participate in the transforming story of God's work in the world. When you are seekers of beauty and people who turn away from ugliness, you participate in the reign of God in the world. So when your friend walks back to the dorm and you see her with her eyes on the ground, and you sense in her the weight of the world, and you go to her, and you put your hands on her shoulders, and you tell her how you praise God for her. You participate in the work of God in the world. And when you see your friend struggling over the formulas, struggling over the proof, tears in his eyes, embarrassed, ashamed, angry at himself, and you go to him and you say, you are engaging this as a man of integrity and honor. You could have cheated. You could have sought help in lots of different ways. And you have been faithful. And I will walk with you tomorrow to the professor. And we'll both get help. You are participating in the work of God in the world. And when you see your friend hungover and broken, and you are hoping that she has reached the end, the bottom, you go to her and you put your arm around her and you tell her how much you love her and how there is the beauty of God within her, and you are not going to let alcohol take it away. When you do that, you participate in the work of God in the world. Because what we know from this book is that our God is not finished yet. He who began a good work among you, writes Paul in the first chapter, will be faithful to complete it by the day of Jesus Christ. And that's why he says, whatever is true, whatever is honest, whatever is just, whatever is pure, whatever is pleasing, whatever is commendable, what is praiseworthy, what is excellent, think about these things, own these things, live into these things that you have seen me try to do. Because when you do this, the God of shalom, the God of restoration, the God of power and resurrection is with you. And when we come to the table, we are reminded of this in such a profound way, that our God does not turn away from the ugly, but moves right into it. Right into our deepest hurts. And right into our greatest sorrows. And right into the places where no one else has ever dared to go. our God moves in to death. And in so doing, he transforms it so that death becomes a way to new life. And people far away are drawn near. And strangers become children. This is what our God does. This is who our God is. He is your God. He sees beauty in you. Blessed be his holy name. Amen.